And let me thank you very much, Neil.
Sure.
For the information, and good luck with the program tomorrow.
Thanks for having me, Hafte.
You're very welcome.
Okay.
And take care again.
You too.
And we should make some arrangements to find out, you know, get some feedback about what is taking place later next week.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the march and the rally is just kind of a focal point for our demands. And like any good protest, we're going to have things to follow up on. So if other people can't make the march and rally, but they want to get involved in some other way to stop this really atrocious pandemic that's going on right now, then I urge them to contact African Services Committee.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just give my phone number and
please.
The website address also. And so the phone number of African Services Committee is 212-222-3882. And my direct extension is 123. And just, you know, say you're interested or learning more or volunteering. And our website is africanservices.org. Because the fight doesn't stop when our protest is over, really, it just begins.
Or when the meeting of these government officials is over, either. It still
right.
continues
of
after
course.
That.
That's when the real work starts.
Okay.
Yeah. I just want to say one thing. I was at a meeting today, kind of a preliminary meeting for the UN session, and it was a meeting of example after example of programs that work in various countries, from Haiti to Brazil to Uganda to Thailand. And again, in all of the dialogue and the confusion and the tragedy that the global AIDS pandemic is, I think sometimes we lose sight of the fact that we can be saving people's lives. We can be preventing infections. We can be treating people with HIV because there are programs that work. And to hear all these examples to me was very heartening. And you know, there are all sorts of graphs of death rates going down and people's lives being extended, and it works. In other words, the treatment works, the prevention programs work, and for each country it's different. So when whomever, whether it's a United States official or just you know, someone off the street that says, you know, we can't, it's not going to work. We can't get treatment to Africa. It's not going to work. People won't take their drugs, or they don't have the infrastructure, or any one of the various arguments that people use for whatever reason to deny treatment or resources or any type of effort. It's just not so. There are various examples, and they're very compelling, that work in various countries under different circumstances, and that's the truth. So to kind of dispel all of the confusion and all what people are hearing about prevention versus treatment, or oh, there's no infrastructure, or even oh, Africans can't tell time, so they can't take their medications. It's just not true, and this is too important to get sidetracked by all of these arguments, because we have plenty of examples where people's lives are being saved, people's lives are being extended.
Okay, Neil. And again, excuse me, my guest is Neil Sachs of African Services Committee. And tomorrow, 11 a.m., they're asking you to turn out at Bryan Park. No, not that is West, Washington Square Park.
Yeah, come on down to Washington Square Park at 11 a.m.
11 a.m.
And we'll go together. You know, yelling our demands for drop the debt, for drugs, and for dollars for the Global AIDS Fund.
Okay.
And we'll march up to Bryan Park.
And Bryan Park is right behind the main library there, the reference library at 40, between, what is it, 40th and 42nd Street.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And again, Neil, thank you so much for taking the time.
Sure, Hafte. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Bye-bye.
Okay, good night.
Bye. At 6 minutes after 11 o'clock, you're listening to WBAI New York. This program is Labrish. My name is Hapte Selassie. And, excuse me, and, well, I should say, let me call it 7 minutes after 11 o'clock. And in a little while, I'll just get back and, as I say, straighten some things out. Meantime.
If the sun refuses to shine, I don't mind. If the mountains fell in the sea, let it be. It ain't me. Now if a sip turned out to be nice, oh, I don't mind. If all the hippies cut off all their hair, oh, I don't care. Dig.
White collar conservatives flashing down the street, pointing their plastic finger at me. Drone bassoon, my cattle dropping dives. I'm gonna wave my free flag high.
off the collie, so my shit grizzly.
Alternating Friday nights, midnight to 3, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. Upon a time when we were colored, stolen from the mother. 400 years later, Mr. Charlie's on some other. Take this as an affirmative act, to slap back the whack. Catch brothers, sisters who are falling through the cracks. Creativity and unity, the keys to maintain our humanity and our sanity. No vanity, materialism, big willy cap. Just progressive elevation, can I get a soul clap? Keep it going on. CUC, keep it going on. Keep it going on. Creative unity, keep it going on.
I'd like to give a shout out to all the prisoners throughout the world.
As the prison population explodes with over 2 million behind bars, only WBAI offers the prisoner shout out line, connecting families and friends with their loved ones inside. If someone you love is doing time, or if you care about the incarcerated, record a message on the shout-out line anytime. Then tune in Saturday afternoon around 3 p.m. for the Gut Bucket Matinee. Jasper Magruder will put up the shout-outs a little after the start of the show. So call 212-209-2958. That's the prisoner shout-out line, 212-209-2958.
Miss you so much at home, man. I really do, man. Daddy loves you. Stay strong. And we'll be all right.
This is Carlotta Joy Walker, part-time. Healing energy always rejuvenates trust. Trust, imagine, metamorphize, evolve. And I'm here just to thank you. Thank you for constantly rejuvenating our trust. Thank you for your new membership. Thank you for renewing your memberships. And thank you for paying your pledges, those of you who have not done that yet. And thank you for being a part of us and supporting us.
That someday I will be your guide. Hello.
What is human cloning? Who is behind it, and what will its impact be on society? Despite opposition of a majority of Americans, biotech corporations are championing a brave new world of human genetic manipulation. On Wednesday, June 27th, from 7 to 9:30 p.m., SOS Food, a coalition of environmental groups organizing against genetic engineering in New York City, will be hosting a symposium on human cloning. The symposium will be held at the Brecht Forum, located at 122 West 27th Street in Manhattan. A panel on human cloning will feature speakers from the Council on Responsible Genetics and other organizations. That's Wednesday, June 27th, 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the Brecht Forum. For further information, contact SOS Food at 212-529-9720.
Night into Saturday morning, 3 to 5 a.m. Explore the interrelated relationship linking music, theater, sociology, liturgy, theology, and professional wrestling. That's Friday night, 4 to 7 in the morning, depending on whether you stay up or get up. 3 to 5 a.m. on 99.5 FM, commercial free WBAI in New York City. I'm Frederick Jingle. Listen to a light show.
And you're listening to WBAI, as has been stated. This is Labrish. My name is Haptah Selassie, and it is coming up on 90 minutes after 1 o'clock. Excuse me, after 11 o'clock. I'm really missing things here. But I guess I'll be, as soon as I'm done this, I'll take some telephone calls and speak with you. Our telephone number, as I say, for reference, is 212-209-2900. And first things first, tomorrow, very, very, somebody I love dearly is celebrating a birthday, and I want to say happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. And on Sunday, my sister is getting married, and I want to say congratulations and best wishes. And that's matter of fact, no, that's almost said my baby sister. Whoops, would she be mad? But my younger sister, Lorna, the best to you. And well, welcome to town, my brother, Douglas. And, you know, since they might be listening, I want to mention also Sharon and Camille and Miss Wilson. Okay. Y'all be good. I may catch you. Well, I'll see you tomorrow. And well, we dealt with that. Just a couple of things. The tragedy that transpired last Sunday with the death of three firefighters being killed in a building, I think it was a hardware store out in Queens. I really, you know, well, let me say I resent the term of hero being affixed to any, whether it's a firefighter or a police officer who dies in the line of duty. That is, they didn't make any particular sacrifice above and beyond, let me say, the call of duty. And just because they die, they are called heroes. Now, as I say, I have a problem with that, particularly since these gentlemen, it's unfortunately, of course, that they are killed. I have to repeat that. These gentlemen were fighting a fire. They got caught inside the building where there was an explosion. It is not as if they had gone in there knowing, for example, that an explosion could then be imminent to save someone's life under those circumstances. It was just then, let me say, an unfortunate sequence of events that they deserve mention, and you know, their family, the support, have no problems with. But I think that we use this term kind of loosely, that everyone who, if you die, you're a hero. And I think that, as I understand hero, it goes a bit beyond that. As I keep saying, I remember a situation where a man who was a manager of a fast food restaurant had a situation where gunmen invaded the restaurant, took his staff hostage, and he said, "Hold me, let them go." And what, you know, they made that exchange and ultimately killed him. Now that's what I call a hero, because he could have, you know, taken his life and gone, you know, and let other people, let me say, pay the price. But he did something, in my view, under that circumstance, that was heroic. Excuse me. You know, the situation of war, you know, you're a soldier fighting, you get shot you know, that doesn't make you a hero. But when you know, for example, that someone has thrown a hand grenade in the foxhole, and you put your body on top of that, knowing what the consequence is, and you do that because you want to save the lives of other people around you, that's heroic. That's hero. That's me. It is not, you know, somebody heaves a grenade in a foxhole, it explodes, it kills six people, and they are heroes for that. As I said, I don't really see it the same way. The other thing that I'm finding interesting is that it is then said that possibly what started the fire was a can of gasoline might have capsized or been knocked over inadvertently and went into the hardware store, and that might have been ignited ultimately by the pilot light or gas, maybe, let me say, a water heater or something like that that was burning. The flames from that might have ignited the spilled gasoline. Now, it is said that the gasoline is being used as a means of making graffiti indelible, that you can't erase it. So, I noticed, though, that in the midst of all of this, it is just mentioned that two teenagers, they're not photographed. Nothing else, in a sense, is being done about them. No stories, no background checks or anything like that are being done on them. And my assumption is, I don't know, it could be anybody, but my assumption is then that they are not black. Because what I said once before is that in situations like this, particularly white youths are protected. And by protection, I mean that when they do something that is out of the way, out of the ordinary, they beat someone, they rape someone, they murder, they shoot up a school or something like that. It is that individual who has, let me say, deviant behavior, whose behavior is then an aberration to what normally is the normal behavior then of white people. But when similar behavior is done, and again, particularly by African Americans, by Africans, by black people in America, it is those individuals are behaving like they all do. See, that is par for the course for black people. And that is what I mean by when I say that white youths, white people are protected. Similarly, the situation of another tragedy of this mother who killed all of her children, where, you know, it is said that she's suffering from depression, postpartum depression. And I've heard, you know, that it can be quite severe. But again, it is, everything is being presented in the tragic mode. That is, it is something unfortunate, yes, but again, she's safe. She's being protected. Nobody's digging up any history of her having a record of child abuse or anything else like that, or even, as I heard one news story would say that they say that she killed her children while her husband was at work, as if the reason why she killed the children was because her husband was at work. That is how it sounded to me. And notice, nobody, in a sense, is looking possibly at the idea that the husband could have been, working on her psychologically, knowing that she's depressed, you know, drop hints here and there for him to do something like that. And I'm not really suggesting it. I'm just saying, you know, that there's no digging that is going on. There's no speculation in the media as to then why such a tragedy happened, why a mother would do that then to her children. And as I said, it's all under the blanket of the protection. It is not that white people are not prosecuted, that they are not arrested, that they are not tried and sentenced to prison. But, as I said, they stand alone. When a black individual does similar behavior, it is then kind of splattered on all of us that is the way they are, you know, those people, them. So that is that. And as I like to say, that being that, in the real world, however, which is the world of football, commonly called soccer, we see that we have to use terms now like the mighty United States. Can you believe that? The United States leads group qualifying in the CONCACAF group. Of five games that they have played, they have won four, drawn one. They drew with Jamaica. They have beaten Mexico, Costa Rica, Honduras, and last Wednesday, Trinidad and Tobago. I had so much hope for Trinidad when this tournament was starting, because Trinidad really on paper has a very good team. However, the tragedy, the downfall of Trinidad started way last year at the end of the Gold Cup competition that saw Trinidad meeting Canada in the finals. Trinidad lost to Canada. Immediately, the coach from Mr. Sinclair was fired, you know, essentially because he failed to win the Gold Cup. And a Scottish coach, Mr. Porterfield, was hired. He has done then a miserable job. He has not been able to put together a team that, as I said, on paper would definitely be at least the second strongest in the hemisphere, or in the region, I should say, not the hemisphere, but in the region, in the group. I would think that they would come second only to Mexico. And as we're seeing, Mexico has also fallen apart. So I was looking at Trinidad and Tobago as being a definite shoo-in for the World Cup finals next year. Sadly, the Trinidad and Tobago Football Federation failed to put a team together to resolve some of the issues that came up with the firing of Mr. Sinclair, the dismissal of some team members who protested the firing. And because of that, the team, I see the team playing rather dispirited football, even to the point where on Wednesday, one of the best strikers in the world, Dwight York, was relegated to playing defense because nothing is constructed on the team to have a playmaker who would then be feeding York, you know, the ball so that he could be looking to score goals, which, as I said, is only one of the many, many problems that is plaguing Trinidad and Tobago. But that is the case. We see that Honduras has really surprised me by pulling out in the pack. It's one of the top three, in the top three, along with the United States and Costa Rica. And Honduras beat Mexico in Mexico last Wednesday. Excuse me, in Honduras, not in Mexico, in Honduras. Costa Rica last Saturday beat Mexico in Mexico, which is unheard of, but nonetheless it has happened. Now, coming up, the games coming up next Saturday will be the United States versus Trinidad and Tobago. No, that's not what it is, because that's the first game. It is the United States, I beg your pardon, against Mexico in Mexico City. That is next Sunday, not next Saturday, but July 1st is U.S.-Mexico and Costa Rica, Honduras. And because of this situation, I'm looking to see Costa Rica to defeat. Last time Costa Rica and Honduras met, they drew, but I think that with everything that is happening, and both teams are playing good, they're playing good football, I'm looking to see Costa Rica. I'll give Costa Rica the edge because they just have a better team than Honduras, and things are getting kind of crucial. Costa Rica definitely wants to, let me say, stake its claim on a place to World Cup 2002 next year in Korea, Japan. So I expect them to win, but that is for next week. And Trinidad, I expect to see Trinidad begin winning football games now that, in a sense, things don't really matter. And then, too, you know, I don't expect to see Jamaica in the runnings at all. But the U.S. is playing incredible football, and it is testament to the organization that is happening from the United States soccer, excuse me, the United States Soccer Association out there in Chicago, the organization that has come to it, where it has a plan afoot where it wants to put a team on the field for World Cup 2010 that is going to contest for the cup, not just be satisfied with representing the region, but definitely looking now to become a winner. And with Bruce Arena as the technical director, and Bruce can coach, and I'm happy about the fact that the United States team is playing with American players. That is, there is no people or members of the team, let me say, who is from, say, the Soviet Union, or from Russia, or from Germany, or so on, that these individuals are eligible for U.S. citizenship or eligible to represent the U.S. and they are being recruited. No, the team is made up of people who learn to play football here, have trained here, were good enough, some of them, to go to Europe to play, and the others are playing in Major League Soccer here. So it is just something, as I said, next week, as it will be closer to the game, and things will, let me say, a bit transpire and become a little bit more clear. I'll find out by then whether or not Porterfield would have been fired by Trinidad and Tobago Football Federation, and we will see how things go. And that is, let me say, essentially it. So our telephone number here is 212-209-2900 at 11:35. So we have a couple of minutes before we will have to, as I say, do the right thing. WBA, are you on the air? No. WBA, are you on the air? Oh, no.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, hi. I don't know what happened on the
phone. Yes.
Okay,
we're okay now. Okay.
Oh, hi. How are you?
I'm good.
Oh, is it open to comment on anything?
Yes.
Okay, because I just wanted to comment on the guy that called and talked about the march in Washington Park.
Yes.
I just wanted to address real quick that I remember a couple of years back when Donald Payne, along with a lot of other Black Caucus members, when Clinton was president, was asking that he forgive the debt and try to help stabilize and help the African countries, and it all seems to have fell on deaf ears then. You know, I really don't think it would be any different now. And I actually thought they had a lot of nerve, since a lot of these countries are actually responsible for the predicament that Africa is in now anyway, to ask them to have to pay money back. So that was horrible.
Yeah, it is, of course, horrible. And I think it's Frederick Douglass who said that nothing is going to be conceded without a demand. So sometimes when you begin, the stakes, you know, it may be a David versus Goliath type of situation, and Goliath will say no. But my absolute confidence is that whether it is now about the forgiving of the debt,
right,
or whether it is a little bit later about reparations,
right,
that question is not going to be answered ultimately by the United States or by Europe. It will be Africa who will be determining that answer.
That's right.
And it is just a matter of time. You know, it is not. I'm not looking to see something like that transpire over the short term. But ultimately, as I said, my ultimate confidence is that, you know, on the continent of Africa is going to be erected a state.
I surely hope so, because
I'm so afraid for
Africa.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, in this day and age, you know, the amount of suffering that's going on there is so terrible.
Yeah, but it is part of the exploitation and the oppression that we're under.
That's
However,
right.
It you know, it is not written anywhere that this is eternal.
Right.
And as I do like to say, Africa will not be in the position that it is in today forever.
I hope. Really do. I just don't
that
hope.
I'm absolutely certain.
I'm glad you're optimistic and positive. I just don't want the same thing to happen to the Incas to happen to the Africans, okay?
But the Incas are still here.
That may be true.
That is it. And neither will the native people of this hemisphere either be in the same position that they are in today forever. And I do not mean by that their condition is going to become worse.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm talking about a time that will come when they will be in control of their lives, of their destiny.
Right.
Making the
self-determination.
Absolutely. And independence.
Right. I'll follow you.
Okay. And thanks for calling.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello.
Well, Major, continually keep you and yours, and I just felt the need to reach out this evening to say, as a native Ethiopian, though displaced, I uphold the Nyabingi order and thank you for the music. Musically speaking, you keep I well, you see, and strong. Yes, sir.
Are you very welcome, good brother?
Yeah.
All right. And thanks for calling.
Stay up.
You too. Thanks. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello. Is this Haptis Selassie?
It most certainly is.
Hey, it's a pleasure, man. Over the years, I have listened to you, and I like your philosophy. I am one of those people who believe in doing for self. As a result, I have set up a training program that covers the five boroughs. We train the youth from 6 years old through 18 in all major sports: golf, tennis, ice hockey, gymnastics, dancing, the works. Plus, we tutor them in math, science, and languages. Naturally, our languages. We also include Japanese.
Well, let's understand this, you know, that I can't remember his name now, but the gentleman who, he wrote the book called The Africans, and he did a series on it.
Uh-huh.
And he said, man is native to Africa.
That's right.
So there is no speech or language where our voice is not heard. And
that is correct.
You know, the thing is, I know people say, you know, our language, and, you know, I was speaking of then, you know, languages that are then today found in Africa, but all the languages are derivative of
Africa, sure.
Yeah. So the idea is for us to know whatever it is we want to know, whether it is, as you say, Japanese or Chinese or Yoruba or,
mm-hmm.
you know, Swahili or whatever it is that we know these, including languages spoken in this hemisphere.
Our primary goal is to set the trend for teaching the kids African languages.
Yeah, but
we do include French, English, and Japanese.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, this I'm fully in support of it. You know, it is just I'm just trying to say that. Let us not, in a sense, be selective, because that we have to understand that even though, say, an African language is an African language, and I am an African, mm-hmm. it doesn't mean that in a sense, in learning that language, that it is going to make me any more, let me say, any more an African?
I would disagree with that somewhat.
Well, naturally, I wouldn't expect agreement on that, because the thing is that we have to see, you know. Let me put it to you this way.
Okay.
In Ghana.
Yeah.
They have languages there in Ghana itself, where the people in that region. One person speaks a particular language,
mm-hmm.
which when he speaks it, it is foreign,
are
not understood by his neighbor.
Right.
See, so the thing is, it is not the language,
mm-hmm.
but our outlook, how we look at the world, how we perceive the world.
Yeah, but the language could be the vehicle to. Changes our perception of the world.
Well, that is true, but what I'm saying is this. It is, regardless of what our perception is,
mm-hmm.
if our perception is not correct, then the perception that we'd like to have,
mm-hmm.
which is, in my view, that African people would have a pan-Africanist and also a very humanist, global kind of outlook. That is, I think somebody referred to it as cosmology.
Okay.
If we have a cosmology,
mm-hmm.
And that is where we come from,
mm-hmm.
then in any language, you know, I remember in Jamaica, there was a commercial that I used to hear every Sunday morning, and it went on I don't know how long, but I think it was either in Chinese or something else, or that was so many different languages that I didn't know what it was.
Whoa.
But at the end of it. At the end of it, in English, the only thing in English said, yes, in any language, parchment sells what sells best. See?
Okay.
And that is it. That is, whether let me say, in an African, you know, mm-hmm. the Akan or the Yoruba,
right.
or the Swahili, or whatever the language might be.
Right.
I want to be free.
Hey.
I must be free.
That, the mind.
And that is it.
That's it.
So I'm saying it is great, because we want to have communication one with the other.
Okay.
But I'm looking at it to say that some of us feel that if we gain the language, because remember this, you know, this is not our mother tongue, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That is the language that we're studying.
That's right.
It is native to Africa,
mm-hmm.
but we ourselves are not then native to that language.
That's right.
And that is the understanding that you want us to have. That is, as I said, that is, it is the way in which we think, and if necessary, it is how we will manipulate the language that we know. To
mm-hmm.
fit our cosmology.
That's right.
Something like what, you know, because as Rastas, you know, I hear, for example, I have a very good friend who say, for example, he will not say to you, he will say to you, if you do something good, he will say, I appreciate love what you did.
Mm-hmm.
Because he said, he's not dealing with any hate.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, he say, appreciate.
Right.
Right? So, it's manipulating language. And understanding that we have that type of recourse.
Somewhere I remember reading that the Jamaican coat of arms, and it says, "Out of many, one people."
Yeah.
In
Latin.
And this is heavy, man.
Yeah.
I start thinking about this, and I see Bajan saying, "Oh, I'm Bajan. I'm closest thing to the Englishman." And I see a Jamaican says, I'm Jamaican, I'm different from all of y'all. And
which is true too, and which is not true at the same time, you know.
Listen.
You know, but I want to make it brief, because,
yes.
you know, time, as I say, is a factor here.
Right.
But sure. Please give me a call, because you said that you teach youngsters,
yes.
Sports.
Mm-hmm.
And
languages and science and math.
Yeah, well, I'm not really talking to you about the languages and the science and the math and all that. I'm talking to you about the sport.
All right.
Give me a call. My phone is, you can leave a message at my voicemail.
Okay.
Which is 212-209.
Hold a second, please.
Yeah.
Can you write that number down, please? Yes, sir. Go ahead.
209-209-2992.
2992.
Yes, I have some information that you might find interesting or useful that I can give you. That is why I'm telling you, because you say you coach sports. And, okay.
And I would love to have you out to meet with the youth and talk with them.
I just gave you my number. We can talk when we speak.
That's 209-292.
2992.
2992.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
And this is Nana.
Okay, Nana.
Take care, my brother.
All right, bye-bye.
Stay strong.
Thank you. WBAI, you're on the air. Oops, no. Let me go back up here. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, good night, Happy.
Good night.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to talk about, you know, last week, Clayton was on the radio Saturday, and this guy called up and called him all kinds of negative names. And these people who say they're progressive and they use these type of terminology and say that they're progressive and that they're white or black or whatever, to use this type of language to another human being on a radio show that we all supposed to support mentally, physically, and spiritually, for someone to do that, you know, to me, it just shows me that this was really a black and white issue. That if a person who say he's progressive could even join the ranks of someone and try to separate them. This is what has happened with Durban, South Africa, and the UN conference on racism. So-called progressive blacks or poor people, they can't afford to get a ticket to go down there to Durban because they are trying to put one thing against another, and that one thing is reparations and indigenous people of the globe who have been shortchanged by the same type of people who would call up a Clayton Riley and use the N-word.
Okay.
and use all this type of language and this information that is out on trying to destroy this venue which I'm speaking on now. This
okay.
thing,
okay.
I find happy.
Oh,
I listened to this show for several years and mostly to your show.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And I feel...
Now, yeah.
Go ahead,
Doc. You feel what?
I feel that, you know, people are trying to destroy this and they don't really want it to be here so people can use it as a tool of empowerment to deal with the real issues. And so the so-called white progressives, like Lou Hill was a white Quaker who started this station. That's what my research told me and showed me.
Okay.
Do you know about the Quaker, person who started it?
No, I don't know. I know the name. I don't know anything about him. I don't know anything about the gentleman who gave this station to Pacifica. There's a lot of that stuff that I don't know, and essentially that I'm not particularly interested in. My interest is that this station remains broadcasting, that the time that I'm here, that I try to use it in the most productive way that I can with the utmost responsibility. And on that, thank you very much for calling.
Keep up the good work.
We'll endeavor to do so. Bye-bye. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah. I wonder what Gary Noel had to say today concerning his assessment. You see, he was studying the situation and the divisiveness at the station, and I missed it because I had a clinic appointment. So I want to know, can you just give me in very broad terms just what was the gist of what he had to say today? I missed the whole thing.
What I got, because I wasn't able to listen, but what I got was that he's dealing with the subject matter on Monday. That is what I got.
Oh.
You know, I don't know.
Oh, so today he didn't say much? One way or the other?
Like I said, I was able to hear maybe about 5 or so minutes of him, and and that's about in the region of 12:30, and he said something about Monday. Okay, but I don't know.
Okay, so Monday he's going to say more or get to the point.
I can't say, but
okay.
If you tune in on Monday and listen,
okay,
you'll know
you.
For yourself, okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. And last, okay, let me, WBA, are you on the air? Hello? Let me go here. WBA, are you on the air? Hello?
This is AstroCom Chelsea. Now, there's two things I'd like to say. First of all, I think it's an outrage you're doing body searches of Jesse Jackson's wife in Puerto Rico when she was arrested for protesting the bombing, the putting her hands on her vagina and her anus. And I'd also like to say that about the white people, remember when John F. Kennedy Jr. died? There's a book called An Intimate Portrait of Madonna. It tells how John F. Kennedy had sex with Madonna and used to lick the whipped cream and peanut butter off her body like...
Astro.
So there is information coming out, but it took 12 years to research that book of Madonna,
but,
Intimate Portrait of Madonna.
But, Astro, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
WBA, are you on? Okay. Let me go up here then. WBA, are you on the air? Hello?
Yeah, hi, Hapti.
Yes.
I really enjoy your show, and I'm kind of sad that people are putting every producer, you know, as the whipping or the sounding board for atrocities, but just to balance out the gentleman that felt Clayton was picked on. Paul D'Arienzo went on for over 25 minutes on how, you know, that guy, Bernard White, even now on cable TV, stinks and he's untalented. We all have to get together, and I just think you're doing your part to maintain your, you know, your wishes and your community activity, and I really respect that you reach an important population. I just wish our acting general manager wouldn't be as heavy-handed as she is with somebody like me who's Hispanic, but she's telling me I'm subconsciously looking to go in a back door and, you know, racist. And I really respect the way you're handling your show and your topics. And let's hope BAI gets better. And, you know, what is it you say at the end? One love?
Something like that. Oh. WBAI, I'm sorry. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello?
Yes. Hi, Abdi.
Here it is.
I have a question for you. One of the things that's being discussed out here among the listeners is what involvement the listeners should have in the governance and management of WBAI and Pacifica, and I'm curious what your views on that would be.
The listeners don't have any role in governance. What do you mean by governance?
That's a good question. Station direction. I guess more programming is what I'm thinking of.
That is what...
Management and programming,
you know,
is what I mean.
The thing is this, that I would hope that a program director, that the station as a whole would be responsive to what would be considered the needs, quote-unquote, of then its listeners, of the community that it serves.
Mm-hmm.
That is essentially it. I don't. When you say governance, you know, I heard
governance was the wrong word. I mean management and programming. And
yeah,
I'd be curious
what you
think. How do you think that could be guaranteed? How do you think that can happen? How does that work?
What can be guaranteed?
That the listeners would be involved in a fair kind of way.
But what does that mean though? When you say a fair kind of way, what do you mean? Like,
well, for example,
you,
there are
you have a vote.
Let me
say, for example, you don't like my show, so, you know, you say it should be off the air, or you like my show and it should be on the air. Is that what you mean? You know, or is
not necessarily. I'm thinking more in terms of, for example, having proportional representation on the lab of the community of listeners,
and have the
national board be elected by a democratically elected group of and/or lab members, that sort of thing.
Well, you know, democratically, I'm finding democratically means if my man is elected, it's democratic.
Is that what it means to you?
No.
What does it mean
to
you?
Excuse me. Excuse me. I'm speaking, man.
Okay.
I'm saying what I've come to realize is that if my man is elected, it's democratic. If my man is not elected, it's not democratic. It's as simple as that. So, you know, I think the best thing to do is that the station remains a source for information, that, you know, listeners tune into it for information, that listeners can become involved in the sense of providing information that might prove to be useful. Maybe wait a second before we go to governance, because I think this idea that people are having about governance. I heard an individual being interviewed here. Matter of fact, on Utrecht Leeds program, and he said that what he has learned is that decisions are best made by a group, an odd number of people.
I'm sorry.
He said that decisions are best made by an odd number of people. Less. I'm not done.
Mm-hmm.
Less than three.
Okay. Yes, I follow that.
Okay.
That means one person makes a decision.
So ultimately, you see, the thing is this. It is this, that people are hired here to run an organization, to run an institution, and there's always been a process where people submit ideas of what they think would make for good programming. If you have an idea that is a good topic that you think would be covered well by such and such a producer or such and such a program, that you submit those things. As I said, the LAB, you know, is not even democratically elected. And I think that when people talk about things like that, those are some of the things that you need to bring up to say, well, if you're talking about democratic process, then let's deal with democratic process across the board. I do have to go, because, like, I do have to go. But thank you. Don't worry about it. We're safe. Okay, we're safe. And it's really time for me to go. I wasn't even paying attention, as I say, to the clock. But as I say here, you've been listening to Labrish. My name is Haptah Selassie, and we'll be back next week with another edition of the program. This program, Labrish, is produced by the executive producer, is Veronica Blakely-Ewart, and it is produced by the Jazz Mac Associates. We want you to remember to tell the people whom you love that you love them, and to show them affection, that is, hug and kiss them and so on, touch them. And in that, you will find unity and strength. Because in unity and the strength that we have, we'll be able to accomplish the things we need to do. So take care of someone, and take care of yourself above all, and stand by for Creative Unity. They'll be here in just a minute. WBAI New York, it is midnight.
There will never be no love at all.